नमस्ते एवरीवन. इट हैज बीन सेड एंड राइटली सो दैट द ग्रेटेस्ट आइडियाज, द मोस्ट प्रोफाउंड आइडियाज आर ऑफन द सिंपलेस्ट, बट ओवर ए लॉन्ग पीरियड ऑफ टाइम ह्यूमन माइंड हैज एंटर्ड इनटू एन एंडलेस कॉम्प्लेक्सिटी, एंडलेस मेजेस. And therefore, it's not readily open to some of the things that are so simple, so true, and things that can completely transform our lives. Take for example, one of the ideas in the Upanishads. What does it say? It says, Soham Asmi, Tattvamasi. I am that. Tattvamasi, thou art that. What is that? That is the divine. And if we were to just live with this thought that everything and everyone in their essence are divine, it would have a very powerful impact upon our lives. Hello.
I muted him, don't worry.
Yeah. I think there'll be need to mute others. So some of these ideas have a very profound impact upon human life, but perhaps their power lies in the simplicity, and human mind wants, it has a penchant of love for complicated things. So we have in the nursing home, ashram nursing home, written in the hands of the mother, finally, it is faith that cures. There is another one which is my favorite, that above all these so-called complications of the human mind, the so-called human wisdom, there stands the luminous simplicity of the grace, ready to act if only we allow it to do so. So when we contemplate upon these ideas and look at how we have approached life, then we can see that how this multiplication of processes, methods, they have been an offshoot of the human ignorance, which is unable to hit the most important single truths which govern our existence. So even today, when we use the word faith and healing, or faith and immunity, you will see that the Google will take you to websites related to healing according to Bible, pastures, healing of snake bites, and all kinds of things. So first of all, there is such a confusion on simple things like faith and belief systems or arbitrary miracles. But faith also has a process. It acts according to certain processes that have evolved over a period of time. And faith doesn't mean an instant miracle, though that may also happen. But even instant miracles have a process. Take for example, when you switch on for a light or an air conditioner, it comes up. So it looks like an instant miracle, but it's a process. So we need to understand what is the process so that we can use it much better. So what really is faith? Faith is not synonymous with belief systems or beliefs. Belief is an intellectual process. Take for example the placebo effect, the well-known thing that if a patient takes a medicine believing that it is going to help him or that it has a certain effect, it somehow activates the human body in a certain direction. Classic example being, I think this research was done in the 90s when the science of psychoneuroimmunology was just developing, that if you take a there were two groups of patients, one the placebo group, the other which was a normal group, and they were given a medicine, supposedly a medicine. One group was given the medicine, the other group was given a placebo, and this medicine was supposed to decrease the immune system. So if you take the medicine, your immune system decreased. It is used in certain diseases where the immune system is hyperactive, for instance, autoimmune disorders. And both groups were given. The interesting part was that even in the group which was given placebo, there was actual reduction of the immune system because they were told that this is the same medicine, it had to have a similar color, everything was same. And only many times in this group, it was a double blind study, even the doctor does not know which is the being given to whom, except the researcher, he knows. And this medicine had the same effect of reducing the immune system, just like the original medicine. So placebo had the same effect. Now, why did it have the same effect? Because the patients thought that they were taking a medicine which is supposed to reduce the immune system, diminish its activity. So basically, this is how belief operates. Belief is a mental thing, and belief is a great power. There are some very interesting stories. One of them I know that in my village, there was a story which is based on real life, that a man was bit at night and he felt that probably some rodent or something has bit him, and he slept, he was drunk. When he woke up in the morning, he saw a crate lying nearby and died instantly. You know, this is a real story. There was another interesting observation that at least I made, and the mother tells a similar story about it. The mother speaks of a story of old time village folk who would bathe in the pond, drink the water, and cows, etc. Everybody would be going there. And those of us who have grown up in the villages, we know this. I mean, I have taken water from the open well, and well, we all survived. So how did we survive? Because we never knew that there are amoebas and viruses and bacteria. In fact, when I first heard about or read about them during my MBBS course, first means that all this about open well and this and that. And when I came to my village, I was very happy to tell my parents that, look here, you know, this is an open well, this can create problem, this can do this and this can do that. And my parents had a very single beautiful answer. One was that, beta, you have grown up through all this, so nothing happened really to you, and I don't remember having fallen sick, having diarrhea except once in my life, those days. The second, they had this instinctive faith, that's how people lived. And they said, beta, Ramji will do, you know, bhala karenge. Means above all these, this was their way of saying that above all these complications, there is the grace of the divine. Now we have lost it. So because somehow we cultivated a kind of intellectual slavery. So beliefs were replaced by a kind of analytical thought and studies, which have their own place and meaning, and we are not going into it. But if belief helps, then can't it be used in medicine itself? So take for example that it has been found even today that antidepressants, 35 to 40% of antidepressants work because they have a placebo effect. So can this be facilitated? So the old time doctors, they had very few medicines. We have all grown up with those pink mixtures and the green mixtures and APC powder. And we got well. There was hardly any antibiotics. Terramycin was there later on. Amoxicillin came on. Amoxicillin came much later. And sulfa drugs were there. So the first thing we need to understand is that medical science has, in a way, trying to discover the processes. It has entered into a kind of maze. And this maze is like a formation that sticks to the human mind now when he enters a hospital. So one would say, is it not right that these processes help? Yes. But the important thing about the human system is what activates these processes. In other words, is there a master switch within us which can activate certain processes in nature? Or some other process. So nature is the one that heals. Ultimately, everybody knows that it is ultimately what heals. Medicines don't heal. Medicines assist. Healing is always by nature. And medicines have a role to play and they assist the whole process. Medicines even have their dravya gun, or they are meant to act in certain ways to help the natural healing process. But then, is there some master switch within the human body or the human system that can activate that process? And that's where we come to three of these switches. which we hardly use because we have lent our whole these things to the analytical thought which talks about the processes. So processes is one thing, and the switches that activate these processes quite another. Let's say what happens when we go to a doctor. So the doctor says that this medicine will cure or heal you. And when we come back with a kind of trust that, well, the doctor is an educated person, and if he is wearing a spectacles, he is more qualified. If he has a serious face, if he picks up the x-ray and looks at it for a long time, these things really matter. I have seen doctors, sometimes I have myself said, it's all right, it will be fine. But the patient is unhappy. So over a period of time, I have realized you need to not only listen, you need to explain. If you just say very simply that this is fine, the person feels he has not been heard well and it has a great impact. So anyways, the patient comes back with this trust that now that the qualified, learned doctor, earlier it used to be also in addition foreign trained, there was a craze for foreign trained. Foreign se aaya hai. So if the doctor was trained in foreign, it means he was God. So when he did that and I came back with trust, or we came back with trust, it activated a whole healing process, or rather it augmented the healing process. So we need to understand that faith healing is not just simply going into a congregational meeting and suddenly, you know, praying intercessionary prayer and everything becomes all right. Even when it becomes all right, as it does many times, this still the process is valid. At the same time, if we believe that there is only one set of process that nature uses, then we are making another mistake. Now, people who take homeopathy, Ayurveda, it works in a very different way. There are different kinds of processes. So, meaning thereby, allopathy has explored only one line of processes. But there could be other processes. For example, you know, normally we put on a switch and the light comes. But there can be an arrangement where you walk into a room and the light comes. Or you clap and the light comes. Or you maybe you simply say, let there be light, and the light comes. So it's a question of the different kinds of processes that nature uses. And when we get stuck to the process or the method, we lose the essence. For example, in yoga, Sri Aurobindo says that because when we go into over-specializing into the processes and the methods, that you must sit straight, you must do this, you must chant this mantra in this particular way, then we are missing out on the essence. So what really is the essence? The essence is faith. You may have a faith in the doctor, you may have faith in his smile, you may have faith because over a period of time people, because majority of people trust him, we may call them quacks because they have not been trained in the way of medicine. But I know myself, again, in my own village, there was a pharmacist who had a roaring practice and people were going because, well, he did cure. Not that he cured everything, but there was a large percentage of cure and people would go there. And as a young medical student, it looked very odd, but now I understand, because he didn't have all these degrees, but he had something which instinctively connected with the trust of people. He would not, a qualified doctor would often go into this could be this could be that. But he would simply, he had developed the art of probably, you know, just caressing the hair, and he would close his eyes and then he would give a medicine and say, you'll be fine. In the ashram, the doctors in old days, one of the doctors used to do this. He would just sit by the side, meditate, give some homeopathic medicine, and most people would get cured. So we need to understand that faith is one of the switches which activates or augments the healing processes. Meaning thereby, if we don't have faith, and if we have even not only faith, faith goes with another switch, which is will. If the will is not to get well, so it may sound very strange, but there are people who harbor death wish within them. And I have seen patients now, over a period of time, you learn that some of these simplest things are so important. The will to be. And there are people who have wished at some point of time that they don't want to live. And this has impacted their bodies so much. I've seen some autoimmune disorders that much later, this continues to have an impact upon their body, because it's like a loose connection between their will not to be and the processes that are happening in the body. And while we keep on giving medicine, perhaps it's important to rectify that will. So there was this famous instance of a lady who had developed terminal cancer. It is documented in one of the book by Andrew Wales, Dr. Andrew Wales. And this lady, because she was in terminal stage and she was carrying, they decided to do an experiment. Those days, experiments were going on with LSD. So, as we know, it's a hallucinogenic, and they were doing experiment to see what are its effects. And they used to take a contract sign, because anyways, patient is going to die. And they gave her LSD, and in that state, when she went into a kind of altered state of consciousness, they asked her one question: do you want to live? This was a random question thrown at her. And suddenly, she described much later that in that state, she realized that she is carrying a baby, and she instinctively came up with this answer: yes, I want to live. The strange part was, when she came out, she was in many ways a different person. She changed her husband, she changed her job, she changed the place where she was living in. She delivered the baby, she was followed up for 20 years till the book was written. She was continued to be alive and doing well. So will is another very important thing which goes hand in hand with faith. So if we have faith but we don't have will, so we need to have the faith and we need to have a will. There are people who are always, they have the will but they don't have faith. This also happens. So we need to understand that these two act together. So faith is not alone. Of course it can work alone, but there should also be the will to live. The third switch which is there in the human being is idea, the thought. So I may have the faith, I may have the will, but my thought may be constantly dwelling upon this idea of death or nothing can happen, because all around I am hearing that. And thanks to the prognostications of the doctor, which Aurobindo cautions against, that why do you prognosticate? Doctor is not God. We have made him such. Just like a priest is not God, but we have made him a God. So we need to understand that when doctors prognosticate, they are basically, in a certain sense, showing their ignorance. In the sense, they are almost playing God, that we can decide what's going to happen. And there are some very interesting stories about it, strangest of all which I had heard, that a doctor actually prognosticated that this patient is not going to live more than 6 months. And I remember the lady coming with the child who was prognosticated, and she was obviously shattered. And I asked her casually, you should have asked the doctor, how long is he going to live? Is he is he God? And well, the lady came back to say, well, the doctor actually died after 1 week. This was a very strange case. I have seen the reverse also happen, where a doctor has said, in 1 week you will be fine. But you know, this is another interesting example about will. So a doctor had said, your heart is as good as a 25-year young person, and you don't have to worry, and the person died after a week. So what happened to faith? The doctor had given him a clean chit. So I probed a little about this man's life, what was going on in his life. And his wife made a very interesting remark or an observation. She told me that about a month back, he was sitting inside the ashram. She recollected this conversation. And he was speaking to another person in the ashram who shared this thing with her. And he was saying, I think I have done what I had to do, and I am ready to play the second innings. A very intuitive sense. So we have to understand that the deepest will is the psychic will. If the psychic has made a choice to go, it goes. And if it has made a choice not to go, no amount of things, because then that is the source of will and faith. The source of will and faith is the psychic. And therefore, those who discover it, there are so many stories which we know. Mother has spoken about Queen Elizabeth I. And people who, in very impossible situations, because they discovered their will was to stay on. And therefore, they could stay on. And because they knew there is a work to do. On the other hand, if the will was to withdraw from the body, as we know in one of the famous instances, well-known instances, Now, I am using the word instance, but we know the story of Sri Aurobindo's physical withdrawal. And he was asked by Niruddha, I have seen you cure so many people by your spiritual force. So, I suppose you are using it on yourself. And he said, no. And he said, but why? And Sri Aurobindo made a very brief reply. Can't explain, you won't understand. Later on, everything became evident that he had decided to take into himself, absorb all the poison that was released in the earth atmosphere post 45. You see, there was the world war and all the terror and all the pain that it entailed, the partition of India and all the pain it entailed, and many things happening in the world at that time. He just absorbed like Shiva. And it was a strategic sacrifice. So there is in us this deeper thing which can choose. It can choose even the moment of death. And it can choose whether it wants to be ill or it wants to continue with an illness. This is a story of another person in the ashram context. And he was suffering a lot due to some illness. And his son, his family in fact, I think, three daughters and one son, I may be mistaken. So the son went, one of the son went and asked the mother. He said, he's suffering a lot. So the mother smiled and replied, yes, because he's very attached to the family. So that's why he will not depart. He does not want to go. Otherwise, his time is there and he can go. So when this was communicated to him, he smiled and understood. And next day he was gone. So there are so many things within us which we have not explored, because medical science is busy exploring only processes, and processes that too physical process. So I often compare medical science and its role. It's like those who repair the fuse. So if, sorry to say, I'm sure doctors won't like it. As a doctor, I can take a dig at myself. That we are repairing the fuse. The wire is snapped and we are not correcting the real problem. Real problem lies in will, contradictory wills, contradictory thoughts, diminution of faith, lack of trust, lack of confidence in the grace. So all these are things which are going on in the inner being. And it's not a belief which is on the surface. I may believe in, let's say, a particular religion, but yet I may not have faith deep within myself in the divine grace. So we need to understand these different things. Also, we may have faith, but not trust and confidence. So trust is that, well, when I have faith and I have called the divine intervention, the divine will do what needs to be done. Confidence, with the divine intervention, everything is possible. So we have faith. We have belief. Most people live on the level of belief, which is an intellectual process. This intellectual process is badly damaged because of the contrary beliefs. Belief in medicine, belief in the process, belief in the methods, belief in the doctors. But faith is something deeper, and along with faith, if there is trust, confidence, then it works wonderfully. And of course, the will should be there, the will to recover, and the idea should dwell upon health and not on illness. And very often we see the role of people who come and visit. They unfortunately make the patient dwell more and more on the illness. So when they come, they ask invariably what happened. Now patient is repeating so many times. And then they make a very sad face. Seeing the face itself, you will fall ill. And then they make, oh, what a disaster is going to happen if you have fallen ill. Oh my God, you are going to die. And even if the person thought that I am going to probably live for a few months, looking at their faces, they feel that perhaps it's just a matter of hours or days. So when we meet patients, instead of doing all that, we should just inspire faith. How did we do it? I could go on with number of examples which I have seen in my life and as a medical practitioner. But to cut the time short, very simply, all that we need to do is not to play God, but to understand that this universe is vast, and with that fundamental humility and confidence in the grace, all that we need to say, don't worry, everything will be all right. This is not a lie. This simply means that we are opening the doors to all kinds of possibilities. And to connect the person in some way to the divine grace. So if we can do that, sometimes a mantra helps. See, there are so many ways of activating this faith. Medicine is one way. A mantra is another way. I am not even entering into the occult power of the mantras and occult values. But the very fact that people who by taking the name of God, it helps. So any which way, you switch on the faith. And if the faith is switched on, then its opposite is doubt, fear. These things must be out of the system. So faith, when we talk about faith, it is understood that fear, doubt, all these things which are going to corrode the consciousness, which are going to confuse the nature's process. So this is how I put it, that nature is a process through which it is healing. Actually, nature heals. Mother says that the body is healed when it decides to be healed. There is a will in the body, there is a faith in the body. How does it get confused? Well, it gets confused because while it is healing, first of all, the doctor puts in very complicated conditions for the healing. And then the next level is when people come and there's so many confusing wills. So the mind gets double message, or the mind gives double message to the body. One is do it and the other is don't do it. It can happen and the other is it can't happen. So because of this double messaging, the body is pretty confused. The body also gets confused because it has lent itself to the mechanical process of nature. So it believes that only when the medicine is given, as the mother says that, you know, the body is cured when it believes it will be cured. So it has lent itself that medicine will heal you. In olden times there used to be this concept, even now we have, that you must give an injection. So I have known people, because there was no call for injection, yet injection were given and the patient got well. Because injection was important. Pill, if it's a small pill, it doesn't work. Nowadays you'll see sometimes pills also come in very attractive packages. When you open a pill, you feel, this is a royal pill. This is going to be a cure for all ills. But if the pill is very small, sometimes patients ask, are you sure it's the right thing? So it's so important. Nowadays, medical science is about, now it has entered into, pharma companies have entered into this packaging and advertising. So you will see even the color of the pill, the name of the pill, all this is done in such a way that the processor activated. So what I'm trying to say is that these are not either or, that either you have faith or you take medicine. You can take the medicine or you need not take the medicine. There is a process through which nature cures. But faith is the one which will make this process 10 times faster and 10 times more active. And if with faith you combine will and idea, this is so wonderful. At the same time, we need to understand that whether we pray, recite a mantra, or we spontaneously have faith, there is a deeper will in us. And if that has decided that I need to go, it will go. The being will go. You can't stop that. Because that psychic will is the most important single factor. It overrides. It's like the master switch, the master controller. So when we look at things like that, then we understand three things come out of it. One is the healing force. The second is the process. Or let me put it, the force that heals. Second is the processes that intervene. And the third is the person who is healed. So in all things we can put these three. So the force that heals, which medical science does not even talk about because it's still busy with the process, is ultimately the forces in nature which heal. Nature force. But nature force can be augmented. There are other domains from where a greater force can be invoked. This what a yogi does or a spiritual person does, that he goes beyond the limits of nature. Nature provides a certain limit or a limited force, because for a normal operation we don't need more. So nature provides a certain degree of force, a certain quality of force needed for our general well-being. That force is, it gives to the species. That's how it operates. But this force can be augmented, so much so that we can go beyond nature force and invoke the one original force. This what is called as the divine force. So there is this force which cures, can be augmented, gone to any extent. Ultimately, there is the infinite force which can be at the disposal of human being. It doesn't happen as a magic, though sometimes if there is a sudden prayer in deep distress, as the Gita says, the arth, the prayer of the person in acute distress, this force can intervene. So this idea of doing studies in CCO with intercessionary prayers are very simply sheer nonsense. And based on that, you will see on Google all kinds of things done on intercessionary prayers. Intercessionary prayers is what? Somebody is in the ICU and there are some priests who are praying, of course, the biblical God, and then they are noting the data. Well, it's not like that. That is, okay, it may activate or it may not activate. But there is a force which can act directly. When the person in distress suddenly calls, and there can be a cascade of events. I know instances even in my own life when somebody was on deathbed and it was almost like she is going to die because a terrible head injury. And I suddenly at that point, like a very rare moment, I don't recollect any other time when I have prayed like an arth. Yes, once, but not for illness. That was a different thing when there was a mafia gang who had threatened, and I prayed. And there was an intervention. I had my own experience of as if everything stopped. And though people told me all kinds of things, nothing happened. It was ultimately the will of the divine which went across and did things. So, and the other was when it was almost a certain death. And I had a small, almost like a communique that what if her soul has decided to leave. And then within me there was a little conversation that your will is beyond every soul's will. Literally praying to mother. And then there was a cascade of events. So one may say that well, this can happen even otherwise. But the best part is when the MRI was taken and the doctors, the neurosurgeon, he said it looked like the bleeding which was taking place in all those little arteries, multiple bleedings, and they all got arrested at certain critical points. Had it gone a little far, it would have been a massive bleed. Already bleed had started and that would have meant death. And it was so very clear that it was the prayer. Now this arth prayer is not done by a priest, it is done by somebody very close, and it has been known, for instance, the history of how when Babur's son Humayun, he had fallen sick and he prayed that, well, you see, religion aside, when you have a problem, then any religion that helps. So he went to a saint's shrine. And he prayed that, well, I want my son to be all right. I am ready to give my own life. And as the story goes, he died because he gave something of his life to his son. And there are stories like that. So meaning thereby, there is ultimately the highest force. But this highest force doesn't intervene any time and every time. So this idea of intercessionary prayers and suddenly God will do some miracle, there will be some lightning and thunder and suddenly you will be cured. This is foolish, because in nature there are certain laws and processes which have their place and importance. They've evolved over a period of time. One day our human body will also become so simple that there will be a direct action without any hindrance. But now the evolution has taken place, developing complex traits. So tracts. So we need to understand this is the force. So there is ordinarily the force of nature, but there is a supernature, and human beings through aspiration, through faith, through will, through prayer in a state of utter distress, which cannot be done mechanically, they can invoke that prayers, and for that force, the supreme force, there are no limits, no rules, no holds barred. And doctors don't understand it, so they use the word coincidence, chance, it can happen. They will explain a process. Process will be there. Whether it is the grace which intervenes or you give a medicine, process will be same. This we need to understand. For instance, when we are happy or sad, there are tears in the eyes, excessive. Why this happens? Because that is a process nature has evolved to bring out for catharsis of excess emotion. So even when there is an intervention, you will have the tears. So process, if we study, process will be the same. But what activated the process, what went through the process is the force. So this is the force. Then the second is, as I said, the process and methods. Can these processes themselves be changed? Yes, they can be. Because it's a certain arrangement of nature evolving along the lines of the animal. But that's where Hatha Yoga comes in. That it is possible by a kind of regulation of certain channels within us, because these processes start from higher regions, they come to mind. Man is mind, life and body. So there are processes within the mind. For instance, attitudes. There are processes within the life. If the life energy is flowing in a disordered way, why does it flow in the disordered way? Because of a chaotic way of life. And there is a very elaborate study about it, that two streams of life flow downwards, one balances and two flow upward. Now, if somebody is constantly engaged in throwing away the life stream by gravitating downwards, then there is a great imbalance in the process of life. So suddenly when the higher force comes and tries to balance it, it meets with a resistance. The mother speaks about it, that, you know, even when the divine force acts, it may meet with the resistance in the person. Doubts, they create a resistance. So there are processes within the mind, there are processes within the life energy system, and there are processes within the body. And these can be changed, at least they can be more harmonious, at least even within the human limit, there is a lot of things that can happen. For instance, the mind, to clear the mind of doubts and all these kind of apprehensions, anxieties, fear. Similarly, to help the life energy flow in a harmonious way, just by simply improving our breathing patterns, deep breathing, nadi shuddhi, plenty of processes. So by doing it, we are correcting the imbalances at these two levels. Why? So that this force which we are drawing or we are opening to by the act of faith, that can act better. So there is the faith like a switch, and then there is the force, but it is meeting resistance in the process. Then there is the physical body. Even these physical body, because we are habituated the body in certain way. Let's say, for instance, somebody who is very greedy or full of desire, certain organs are getting more and more activated. There is a very beautiful one liner of the mother: desires irritate the organs. Why? Because of excess desire, certain organs have to be overactive. And if we learn to moderate our desires, we're not talking about yogis who are supposed to completely master desires or get over desires, eliminate desire, but even in human life, just a life of balance and moderation, which was advocated in old times, which is called as a sattvic way of life. This sattvic way of life, and we can observe it within ourselves, that there are days when we are unable to sleep well and we are tormented and we fall sick eventually. But there are days when you feel a gladness inside, especially when you have had a good sleep, proper rest. And then we'll see that generally things are fine. There's a gladness. And we go through life in more or less an immune way. Simply because we are generally having a very good balance, a harmonious streamlining of the processes. This can be so powerful when we can have a robust nervous system, robust prana, robust mind and a robust body. There are some people, of course, born like that. But there are others who can develop it. So at these three levels, the processes. And then, of course, there is the patient. The method, the force, the method and the patient. Now, there are patients who have, you know, somebody has invoked the grace. And then deep within the patient, there is this, as I said, he's not receptive at all. Why? Because all his life, he has lived a very different kind of life. There is that famous story that if you last minute call God, you know, you will be catapulted into nirvana. So when this question was asked to Sri Aurobindo, he said, you have to read this in conjunction with the other words of the Gita, that therefore, Arjun, remember me at all times and fight. One leads a life which is very different. And suddenly one expects that last, and he speaks of it as, it's not a last minute edifying Christian death where you are baptized and therefore you believe that you have the salvation. It doesn't work like that. You can't cheat God. So it's a life that we have led, the patient has led. For instance, people who do physical culture, now their bodies are more receptive. Why is it that simply walking half an hour to 40 minutes a day, even 5 days a week, it has been observed, it is sufficient to keep away number of illnesses. It's a known thing. Why does it help? Simply because through physical culture, the physical consciousness becomes more receptive. And if we don't do that, and suddenly we expect something to happen, but the physical consciousness is not receptive. So on the patient side, there has to be an openness, there has to be a receptivity. So it is this which forms the trilogy of healing. There is the force, the divine force which heals. So first is the switch. Switch is faith and will. And this switch, the main switch lies within our soul. But that is normally not easily accessible. Those who have accessed it, found it, or identify with it, life is very simple. They need to just see inside, feel what is the will. And of course, the soul never wills for disease, this all this idea, because of karma, one likes suffering. No, the soul has no such. If suffering comes, it is fine with going through its purifying fire. But that's very different from the soul wanting suffering. The soul is always in a state of surrender, full of faith, full of joy, gladness, peace. And its whole thing is that whether the mission for which it has come in a particular lifetime is over or not over. If it's over, it cares not even a penny about the age. Men like Swami Vivekananda at the age of 39, or Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa at the age of 58. People often say that, well, couldn't they heal themselves with the spiritual force? They could, but do we really expect them to be selfishly engaged in healing themselves? They were what they were precisely because they were unselfish. And the day Sri Ramakrishna discovered, he took upon himself number of illnesses of the disciples. And the day he discovered what he had to accomplish was over, and he had already created the most important single instrument through which his work will be done, he withdrew. That was Vivekananda. What about Swami Vivekananda? There is a very interesting dream of one of the disciples of Sri Ramakrishna, who was also living there in the mutt, and he saw in his dream one night that Swami Vivekananda is telling him that, I have spat my body. And next day, they discovered that he has departed. There's so many communications like that. Of course, Sri Aurobindo is beyond all this, and yet people had received communications when they went back. But Amrita, many others, that this is the deepest thing inside. And if we discover and identify with it, then problems are over. But when we do not, then yet we must check our faith, our will, the idea upon which the mind is dwelling, and we should do every possible effort to rectify it. Then, when this switch is on, then depending upon our own faith, we can invoke the highest force, which means there is a triple faith that is required. Faith in God, in whichever way we believe in, God's grace, which is infinite. We may have a limited faith that, well, God's grace is there, but what can it do because I have bad karmas? No. Faith in God, whose grace is infinite. Nothing is impossible for it. Then we need to have faith in destiny, that nobody is being targeted by destiny to be unduly suffer. People suffer, it's a fact. But it's not that people are being targeted. Instead, we should understand that why there is suffering and try to remove its causes. So faith in destiny, that destiny can change. It is something which can change if we continue to endure a process. We give up and we give in. But there is a reason why destiny operates in a way that there is pain, suffering, illness. And instead of justifying it in various ways, if we understand that it's come to just make us endure a certain process, which is normally a purifying process. So if you see, often people talk about, when they talk about stars, they say Rahu Kalam, or Rahu ka kya hota hai, Graha Dasha, which is for 2.5 years, or Shani, which is 2.5 or 7.5 years. And then there is in astrology something called as Kal Sarpa Dosh. So I had a talk once with an astrologer, and he said something very interesting. He said, you know, people often say Kal Sarpa Dosh means the person is going to die. But you know, it is for evolution. If you go through it, then you will end up very strong and healthy. Otherwise, yes, during that time, it's vulnerable. You're very vulnerable. I have seen in natal chart, they write like that. The risk of death is very high. And I have seen this happen, again, quite a few examples. Actually seen Kal Sarp and how it can operate. And there is a whole occult dimension through which nature works. There is a whole occult side to nature. So there is the supernature, there is the occult nature, where there is the impact of all these forces which inspire fear. For instance, corona time, we have seen how much fear and how much greed of those who were spreading fear, because a lot of people came top 3 in the Forbes list. So there was this greed and fear which was driving the virus crazy into the human system, because human beings were succumbing to this occult attack of fear. It was like an invasion. I've shared my own experience where suddenly you came out and you felt somebody is throttling you, taking you by the neck. And I realized it, that force which is trying to invade you through fear. And if it couldn't attack you through the corona, it would try other means. Because that was a force whose purpose was to disrupt the world order. Ultimately, it served a purpose. That's a different story altogether. So this is how it begins to attack. And it has been found, for example, that if in an epidemic, if few people recover, then suddenly it is as if this healing immune system, it spreads. Now people use the word morphogenetic resonance and all kinds of terms. Suddenly that healing process gets transmitted horizontally. Now you can do it through faith in vaccine, you can do it through very different means. But if few people begin to recover, it has a cascading effect. Now how does it have a cascading effect? Even it doesn't matter whether anybody has taken vaccine or not vaccine. Vaccine was of course a big hype, and it's a dangerous principle, dark and dangerous principle, as Aurobindo calls it. But then few people have to make a breakthrough, and the mother recounts her own experience. Why does it help? Because suddenly you have the faith. People are recovering. So when you see people recovering, then otherwise what were the stories? Oh, we were seeing in that building and how the stories are recounted as if first time somebody has ever died. And the data was being, of course, heart attack or anything, diabetes. If you had corona, it was corona. All other things were. So as a result, there was an escalation of doubt and fear. So this is how these occult forces work. And then there are processes within the body. So all this we have to take into account. And then finally we have the physical system. Some physical systems by constitution are weak, bad heredity, but that can be overcome by good physical culture. Or some are constitutionally very good. We know, like Baba Amte, he had injected leprosy organism within his body 3 times, properly signing that I am ready to undertake this study, because it's so difficult to study leprosy because there are no real footpad of mice and it takes long. But he never got leprosy because his constitution was so strong. When he was given a medal, the man literally, he was not wearing a shirt, so he put the medal on his chest through the skin. It's not a good thing to do, okay? But then nevertheless, he was constitutionally very strong. So there is a difference between physical constitution. That's why Ayurveda is such a wonderful science. Because it's the only science which takes, even homeopathy takes, but Ayurveda takes into consideration the basic constitution when it gives medicines which can help you to boost your immune system. Vat, Pitt, Kapha. So some people are born fighters, some are more sluggish in their responses, some are by nature instinctively towards harmony and balance. So this is how we have to understand one day. This whole thing is going to come up hopefully as a holistic science, where all these things are taken into consideration. And I think I would suggest as a closing note to James that why not take out a book on how faith cures. We can title it as Faith Cures. And all these things in great detail at every level, how faith operates. So there can be faith in the mind, but there may not be faith in the life force. There may not be faith in the body. People begin to shiver. They have faith in the mind. Know that story with which I am going to close. When the Kauravas attack Pandavas who are in hiding, so they can't reveal their identity. So their young boy, 16-year-old lad, what is his name? Uttar. He says, I am going to fight, I am going to defeat them. He is all thrilled up because everybody is, you know, you are a prince and you are a Kshatriya prince. And he is all geared up because in mind he is prepared to fight. So Arjun says, okay, we'll go along. I'm sure you will. He knows that what may happen. But when he's faced with a real war situation, he begins to shiver. And that's when Arjun comes in. So we have people who have a lot of faith in the mind. But their faith in the body, their body begins to tremble with fear. Their vital, the life energy, it begins to sink when they are faced with a situation. So this entire mechanism that operates, so that we come out of this kind of a loophole where either we have all medical science and its data, or we have only about intercessionary biblical prayers, or we have this idea of a miraculous superstition, something happening. There is a science. Spirituality is a science in its own right. And we need to explore it as a science which goes far beyond the limits of the medical science by exploring possibilities, latent possibilities. And among these latent possibilities, one of the greatest possibility is that finally it is faith that cures. And to the divine grace, there is nothing impossible. Everything is possible for the divine grace. But there is a but, and that but is where the whole science comes in. Okay, thank you, James. If there is a question, I'll be happy to take it. Yeah.
Could you answer me a question?
Because, yes.
One thing that I'd like to know is, how can we actually build up our faith? Is it something that's innate, or is it something that's potentially we can just build up?
Faith is, yes, how can we build up faith? Faith is innate only to the deepest part of being. The soul is stuff. The stuff of the soul is made up of faith. And the Gita goes on to say that a man is his faith. So this faith is inbuilt within the soul, because the soul is connected with the divine grace and knows the divine grace. I know I may sound like a religious priest, but you know, I can tell you it is backed up with a life. I was going to say lifetime of experiences, but I suppose. So anyway, it is the stuff of the soul. But discovering the soul is not an easy task. So how you can build it? Different people constitutionally, they may get it from their parents, they may get it from the environment. Like for me, I have seen from childhood my parents, and also because those days we didn't have, see, the price we have paid for technological development and advancement is we have paid the price of our natural healing processes has been very badly damaged because and I don't want to get into how the pharma industry boomed and it still continues to boom. But nevertheless, certain environment, especially where people are simple, or in Indian setting, most people, because faith is like, we receive it, faith, bhakti, surrender, we receive a gift from parents. At least we used to, I don't know how are things now. So we may receive it as a gift. I won't use the word heredity, unless we use the word heredity as a non-vertical transmission. It's a transmission which takes place with the parents, with the culture, milieu. So there are societies, there are cultures which strengthen faith, there are cultures which, you know, strengthen doubt. Then it can develop. It can develop faith in the body, for example. It can develop. As I said, there are some people who may start with a lot of fear within the body when they do something. But through physical culture, slowly the body develops its own confidence. It begins to believe that, yes, it can do certain things. So it can be developed and cultivated. One thing which is very important is the company. So be in the company of those who inspire faith, who open us towards deeper possibility, and shun the company of those who fill us with doubts and fears. And the mother uses a very interesting analogy. She says, when somebody is suffering from an illness, and unless we are there to cure that person, we generally keep away, keep a little distance. I mean, corona, social distancing. So she says, but the contagion of psychological contagion is far worse. So when we keep the company of those who are full of doubts, then it's corrodes, it enters. Of course, when somebody is developed inside and he is like a mountain or like a banyan tree, nothing will happen. Any amount of storms and cyclones can do nothing. But I am talking of the general average condition. And on the other hand, keep the company of those who are full of faith. And if we cannot find such a company, and even otherwise, read books that fill us with faith. Read Swami Vivekananda. He will, one sentence, and he will, like a lion, read Sri Aurobindo. He says, the faith that is required is faith in yourself, faith in destiny, faith in God. Something very similar even Swami Vivekananda said. Reading those lines, you are absolutely energized. So, but we read all kinds of things. We almost take an intellectual pride in reading this particular doctor, this article, and sometimes, you know, people send me even some books or articles written by some qualified doctors. I don't want to embarrass them that well. You get past this stage long back. So read books which are very inspiring. Read the Gita. It'll take away fear of death like this. Magical effect. Anybody who has read the Gita and is still afraid of death, I would say has not read the Gita. Just dwelling upon just first few words of Shri Krishna, you'll not be afraid of anything. I remember reading something from Swami Ramtirth way back as a child. And all that he says, afraid? Afraid of what? Of elements? Elements means all these ghosts and all. They dare them. Of destiny? Challenge it. Of God, O man, thou art God thyself. And that was like power. So always it's good to keep some of these writings within the house so that even subconscious messaging goes on. So satsang, the power of company, of books, of the words. So there are a lot of ways by which faith can be enhanced. But more important is when we get it to resist all temptation to lose it. Why? Because some doctors say so. I have never understood. After all, I have faith in doctor and faith in the methods of science. But all science, medical science, I can say for sure, all statistical science is ultimately an approximation. It's an approximation. Purely mathematically, it's an approximation. But we have so much faith. And when things change, how did people change now for at least reversal of heart disease? Why was it accepted? Because, you know, books were written by qualified cardiologists that certain changes in lifestyle help. But reversal of diabetes, people are not accepting. See, even recently there was a, thanks to the young entrepreneur director of, present director of All India Institute, Delhi, he's wanted to start a department of spiritual medicine, I'm told. But there was so much resistance from the doctors. And when there was invitation by someone to speak about, you know, just reversal of diabetes, none of the doctors wanted to attend. Except maybe just very few. Why this resistance? Is it science? Science explores. Science wants to know and understand. Science doesn't make a priori barriers that no, I don't believe in it. Then it's a belief system. Say that you are not a scientist, you are simply having a belief system. So this is how, unfortunately, that's the state now. But this is changing, thanks to webinars that you are organizing like these. And many other places, people are beginning to change. And as I said, even a book where something like a multi-author thing, it can be a good idea. Okay, that's the answer.
Actually, I think Dipti had a question.
Yes, please.
What is the role of karma?
Karma?
In illness.
Yes, so that's of course a very big subject and I have spoken about it. But in short, karma is all that action that goes forth from us. So what goes forth from us? Thoughts. What goes forth from us? Will that impels things. What goes forth from us is feelings. What goes forth from us is physical energy or actions, actual action. So whatever I have spoken in a way that, you know, the attitudes of the mind, the feelings, the state in which we are in, the motives, the will, all this is part of the karma, machinery of karma. Now, of course, this is, we are talking of instant karma. I have released certain energy forces and they have an impact. Surely they have an impact because if I habitually release, now I am explaining the whole thing in a karmic way. For instance, I am all the time being dragged to lower and lower levels of consciousness by my actions. So what happens? I have opened myself to these forces and energies. So supposing I am having ill will for others. Now there are domains which are full of ill will. The beings of these domains, the multiverse which Indian yogic science has conceptualized. And these forces are looking wherever they see. Like, how do people sell you a product? They sell you a product because they know that somewhere you are looking for them. You are fond of them. So when we engage in a certain kind of activity repeatedly, make it a habit or a way of life, when our mind develops certain patterns, now these patterns attract similar patterns. So when we are full of fear, forces of fear will enter into us. So we need not bring in the moral dimension. My problem is by bringing in the moral dimension of karma. Or if I engage myself in very activities which are harsh, cruel, etc., I attract similar forces. So karma means thereby that as the energies I release in this world, those kind of forces get attracted to me. So if I instead release divine energies, energies of goodwill, faith, faith in God, then those kind of divine forces get drawn. It's a simpler way, better way. Of course, there are other aspects of karma. We learn this through consequences, meaning thereby when I act in certain ways and there are consequences, eventually something in us learns. But what we should be very careful is not to invoke karma as a judgmental or a term which is pejorative or talk about sin and guilt. I suppose we are past that age of sin and guilt and all these stories of punishment by God. At least in Indian mystic thought, this was never there. This all a creation, foreign, what do we say, imported stuff. And a bad imported stuff. So it's not about karma, it's not about papa and punya and their consequences, punishment and reward, God like a CEO sitting with a stick and a carrot, and that God would not be worth calling a God, apart. So karma is simply that whatever energies we release, they hover around us first. It's like if I burst an atom bomb in my neighbor's house, I am the one who will first get affected. So energies that we release, they create my atmosphere, my thoughts create my atmosphere, my feelings create my atmosphere, my will creates my atmosphere, and this atmosphere attracts similar forces from the world, from others and from the other domains of being. So this is what karma is. Yes, the rebirth part is also there. If I have lived a certain way, then ultimately the soul has to learn that it lent itself to these inferior energies. So that's where karma and its consequences come through hard consequence. It learns. When it comes back, it has learned the lesson of particular classroom, say standard 5, it goes to standard 6. So all karmic law rebirth is about learning and growth and not reward and punishment. That's all. Otherwise we start saying, oh, he's a sinner and he has done a great sin. That's why he's having, you know, whatever, viral fever or God knows what. I mean, so that's very dangerous. You make it worse. A person is sick. I know an instance where, now even in India, somehow some people carry these crazy thoughts which are not there in scriptures originally. Somebody who had met with an accident, and the person comes and says, normally you ask, did you, because somebody has to be explained that you were driving wrongly. I mean, he was hit by a lorry. Instead of doing anything to the lorry fellow, someone comes and tells him, you know, it is karma and things of the past. This makes it much worse. It's one of the most insensitive statements that somebody can give, even if it is done with the intention that ultimately it is supposedly meant to help you accept and bear. Why should we accept suffering? We should not accept suffering. If it comes, yes, it's there. But this love for suffering and justifying it under the name of sin is a very unhealthy mentality. It's an unhealthy mind that loves suffering and justifies it. And we should we should come out of that age. Middle ages, dark ages, all these theories. Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Rock. Does anyone else have any comments they'd like to make or questions or...
And always you can write on the group, so I'll reply.
On the group, yeah.
Yeah.
Can I go?
Please.
Good evening, Alokda.
Good evening, good evening.
I just had a question, because I experienced this, so I wanted to ask you whether faith becomes stronger when you have a regular practice of probably connecting to the source or connecting to the divine or meditation.
Yes, surely. As I said, faith does become stronger if we have a practice which helps us connect to the divine within, or whichever way we conceive. Because divine is the source. As I said, the soul is where faith is embedded. It knows. And divine is the ultimate source. And in the life of such a person, possibly even at the mental level, faith develops more because the person is able to see interventions which otherwise we don't see. For example, you travel. Your travel was smooth. There were no accidents. Do we thank the grace? But a person who is doing a practice of turning to the divine will see the hand of grace. What could have happened, which didn't happen. So certainly a daily practice is helpful, provided we understand that its practice is one way of connecting with the source, and each one develops his own. So we don't make it into a kind of a system that everybody should do the practice or become too rigid about it, because when we go into too much technicalities, we become like, you know, a prayer has to be read like this and read like that. But as the story goes, that a child simply recounted ABCD five times and says, God, you know the best prayers, you know my heart, please make the best prayer possible for me. It's a story, of course, a way of saying. But the best prayers are the ones that spring up from the heart directly, rather than something which is mechanical. So practice can be mechanical, or practice can be involving your heart. So it's much better if it touches the heart, rather than it just a mechanical way. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also want to.
Yeah.
Just a minute. I will just take a minute.
Yeah.
I also want to express my deepest gratitude to Alokda, because I had come to the ashram just 15 days after my radiation. And my sister had asked me to meet Alokda. But I knew that he is in the clinic and he is very busy. So I was hesitating. And one day just at the ashram, I was just sitting in meditation, calling out to the mother. I was in a very bad state at that time. And I just saw Alokda and I just ran across to him, because I opened my eyes and I saw him. And I just ran across to him. And I just told him, okay, I'm so and so and I'm having this problem. And he just, in his very calm way, looked at me and he said, all is going to be well. You are going to be well. And somehow I feel sometimes faith also comes from people who just assure you in a very kind, non-dramatic way.
Yes, because the divine works, you know. The divine responded to you and he made me an instrument, yes.
I just wanted to thank you for
thank
that.
You, thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, all her grace, all her grace. So James, maybe we can wind up with this and...
Yeah, I think so. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Actually, we wind up the whole workshop.